Good evening. This is Future Focus Now. I'm Elwood Robinson, and I'm your host. I'm also Chancellor of Winston-Salem State University, currently ranked by Money Magazine the number one public HBCU in the country for best value. Future Focus brings you the best in conversation with some of this country's leading experts and personalities addressing topics that impact your life today. If it's happening now, we're talking about it every week here on Future Focus. Thanks for joining us and thanks for tuning in. This is going to be a remarkable show, I promise you that. But before we get to the show tonight, I have to make a special announcement. At Winston-Salem State University on Friday, it was supposed to be our graduation ceremony for the class of 2020. And you know, because of this pandemic and because of everything that's happening, we were not able to have a face-to-face graduation, but we're going to do something special on Friday. Go to our website about 12 p.m., and then we'll do virtual voices for the class of 2020. It's a celebration where students will come and we will try to commemorate them for the outstanding work they've done for the class of 2020. This is not a substitution for commencement exercises. I promise you that. This is just a virtual online celebration. As soon as we can, we're going to put together an amazing graduation ceremony for you. That's what we do at Winston-Salem State University. For the past 2 years, in 2018 and 2019, we had the most watched graduation ceremony, we think, anywhere in the world. And so 2020 is going to be no different. As soon as we can, we're going to get back and make sure that we give you the kind of celebration that you need, class of 2020. But on Friday, tune in, let's celebrate them virtually. Go to our website and do that for me. This evening, we're gonna talk about healthcare in America. For full disclosure, I'll tell you, I'm a clinical psychologist, and I spent almost 4 decades studying health disparities and looking at social determinants of health. The challenge for us today is how do we provide remarkable healthcare to every single person in this country? And we know that that's so much needed. And what we have out of the conversation that we're gonna have tonight is with Carl Amato, president and CEO of Novant Health. Novant Health is one of the leading healthcare systems in this country in a 4-state integrated network of physicians, clinics, outpatient centers, and hospitals. It has a network of over 1,600 physicians, 29 employees, and more than 640 locations, including 15 medical centers. Wow, that's delivering healthcare to a lot of people in this country. And so tonight, sit back. If you're joining us live on Facebook, call a friend, tell them that we have Carl Amato talking about delivering remarkable healthcare to every single person in this country. Carl Amato, where are you? Are you here? Are you with me?
Yes, I am. I'm here, Chancellor.
Are you in the house?
I'm in the house, Chancellor, and I thank you for inviting me onto the show tonight.
We are so glad to have you here to discuss such an important topic in terms of healthcare in America. I just told you about my background. Tell me how it is that you got into the healthcare industry. And how is it that you became president and CEO of Novant Health? We'll get into a little bit more about the great work that you're doing at that health center a little bit later.
Well, great. And Chancellor, I was just listening to your introduction, and all the great work that you've done at Winston-Salem State University is incredible. And thank you for all of your commitment to higher education and our community. And so appreciate that work. Well, I'll tell you, my healthcare journey started really early. So at 18 months old, I was diagnosed.
Wait. You were CEO at 18 months?
Yeah, I am, because I'm going to tell you what got me to healthcare. Okay. That's what mm-hmm. you're going to love. Right. So at 18 months old, I was diagnosed as a type 1 diabetic.
Wow.
It was back in the day when a lot of type 1 diabetics, you know, they weren't surviving. I think they had told my parents, my mother, and my father that, you know, maybe 20 years and I might survive. And But I got to tell you, with the dedication of family, friends, and great people looking after me and helping me, I've not only survived, but I've thrived with diabetes. And I think there was a prayer that I remember my father saying with me as a young kid, which is why I think I'm here today. And that prayer was simply, it was two parts to it. The first part was basically, he asked the good Lord to help me manage the disease itself with the talents that I had. But the second part, he said, and I didn't understand it as a kid, but he asked the good Lord to help me utilize my diabetes to help others. And so I look back now, and my quest over now 34 years has been really, over the years, I've spent probably over 30 of them in healthcare doing just that, trying to help others. And I think about what I was taught as a kid. It was having a caring heart, opening up access for possibilities for all people, and truly, truly ensuring that you could inspire hope in people. And so that's the culture that I've brought to Novant Health. I've been with Novant Health for 20 years. I've been the CEO for the last 9 years, and I'm proud of the culture that we've created. It's a culture of caring and a culture of really trying to make sure every person in our community gets the remarkable care they need and deserve. And so I'm glad we're having this topic tonight, because it's really one that's hot on my mind, and it's really at the top of our priorities at Novant Health.
That's really a great story, Carl. I appreciate you sharing it with our audience tonight. And it really speaks to, I think, sometimes where you find folks is a reflection of their life history. And you just told us an amazing history. I think about the work that I've done for the past 40 years. And I've done that work, Carl, primarily because of where I grew up. I grew up in rural North Carolina, and I had two parents that were victims of strokes 2 years apart. And they were 45 minutes from the nearest hospital. And by the time they got to my father, or by the time the paramedics got to my mom, you can see we've lost valuable time. And we know so much about strokes, and it's important to get them to the hospital quickly. And so that's kind of been my story, similar to what you were saying, trying to make sure that we can deliver remarkable health care, not just to some people, but to every single person. And so the big global question that we want to take away from tonight, and we'll get into it a little bit later, is how do we deliver remarkable health care to every single citizen in the country?
Yeah, and Chancellor, so you and I have had a very similar experience. I grew up in a very small rural town, Patterson, Louisiana, and just west of New Orleans. And my father died of a heart attack, and he didn't get to the hospital in time. So if you think about all that we've been able to do at Novant Health, it's really been trying to make sure all people have access to this remarkable healthcare. And by the way, remarkable has been defined through consumers. We brought people in from rural areas and from all parts of our 4-state footprint that accustomed to our and interact with our 15 hospitals and 600 clinics. But to hear from them, and they've helped us define what remarkable looks like through their eyes, not just through the Novant Health eyes. And so when I think about that, it really goes back to your question about how do you make sure everyone receives remarkable health care? And I'll tell you, the first thing that we did at Novant Health, though, is we started with diversity and inclusion at the highest level in the organization, the board level. We actually made sure that we had a diversified group that represented the communities we serve with lots of different industry backgrounds. And then I moved to my executive team and made sure that every executive team, that we had a diverse group of people, men, women, African-American, looked at lots of different industry capabilities. And I'll tell you, I'm proud to say that half of our executive team is they're women. The other half is African-American people. And so with that, though, we went after diversity and inclusion and health equity long before the pandemic of COVID-19 even came out. So let me tell you how we started. to make sure everybody was getting a remarkable experience, we couldn't just look at how we were serving everybody. We were winning global safety and quality awards across our entire footprint. And we decided, well, let's look at it by demographic. Let's look at it by age group. Let's look at it by different zip codes and see if everyone's getting that kind of award-winning performance. And what we found out is that was not the case. And I've got a good example. A good example is we looked at pneumonia discharges, and we were winning awards for helping people not be readmitted to the hospital. Yet when we broke it down by demographics, we saw African Americans actually were being readmitted about 6% to 7% higher than that of all of the other demographics of the population we served. And so we had to figure out why. And how do you figure those things out? You've got to get into the community and understand. So we created these business resource groups. For example, our African American business resource group went in and tried to understand what was happening and why were so many African Americans being readmitted. And it was about discharge planning. It was about follow-up care, subspecialty follow-up care, you know, access. And so we made changes in that. And guess what we did? We eliminated the disparities between all population. But guess what? We reduced readmissions for everyone, not just African Americans. It went down for African Americans, but it went down for everyone in that population.
Carl, let me stop you there. You need to say that again, because not everybody understands why diversity and inclusion, diversity work is so important. If you can close the gap, you actually help everyone. I need for you to repeat that again.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, we not only eliminated the 6% difference between African Americans and the rest of the patients we serve, but then the entire patient population, including African Americans, went down another 3 to 4%. So I was telling you, that was the eye opener for us to say, we're going to do this for every patient, every discharge, and every service that we provide. And that's what we've been doing, Chancellor, is going after every one of those, trying to uncover why are there health disparities, why are there gaps in care, and what are we going to do different to really make a difference?
Yeah. And I can tell, and I can tell our listeners, I can tell our viewers that you are serious about this. Oftentimes people will come on and they'll give lip service to diversity. They'll give lip service to trying to close the gap in terms of health disparities. But you live this, you breathe this. This is a part of your operation. Tell me how you got to that space and what are some of the challenges that to continue in this space?
Yeah, you know, I think one of the things we did, I will tell you, it was a little probably risky for me as the CEO, but I actually went out and hired a group. They were called, they're actually called the White Men's Caucus Group, that just the name is scary, challenging. What is that? But what I did is I had to get white men engaged inside of Novant Health to participate in changing the culture and going after not only health disparities, but how we were going to handle diversity and inclusion and equity throughout all of our team members and how we hire and not only hire team members, but how we actually hire contractors and everywhere in our community. And so I took the top 20 white executives offsite for 3.5 days with this group, and we actually became everybody we were biased or didn't know anything about. So we became African-American males, and we had to understand what is it that they go through on that drive to work? What is it for like a female to operate with sexual harassment and things in the workplace? What is it for the LGBTQ to deal with the challenges that they deal with each and every day? And so we did that. And then I put the board, the Novant Health board, through a half-day session of that. And I'm going to tell you, from that moment on, we started to recognize the biases we had, the hidden biases, the things that we just didn't recognize that we didn't know. And so the point is we started coming into the room having much more candid conversations about reality. We started having much more candid conversations about what was going on in zip codes where certain African Americans weren't getting the access to care. We got on a bus and we went into those neighborhoods to tour them ourselves. And so those are key examples, I think, were defining moments for us as an organization where we engaged not only the entire workforce, but we got white men to get off the sidelines and help with changing a culture of diversity, inclusion, and equity.
Yeah, I mean, excellent. And I want to say this at this moment. You have been a great partner with Winston-Salem State University. When I arrived at this institution, now going on 6 years, actually I'm in my sixth year, believe it or not, then we had the mobile health clinic. And the mobile health clinic came about because of a partnership between Winston-Salem State and Novant Health. So one, let me thank you for that partnership. You've been a great partner. And we had Dr. Whit Glover on last week, and she talked about the great work that's being done in partnership with Novant using the mobile health clinic to do screenings during this pandemic. And so I wanted to publicly thank you for that partnership. And talk to me a little bit about, you know, why you got involved in that partnership. Why was it important to partner with Winston-Salem State University?
Well, I'll start by, you know, I actually started one of the mobile clinics in Charlotte. Now we have three of them that are going into, we started with schools and we were going in to try to see if we could connect with some of these underserved schools that kids were not able to get vaccinated. They weren't able to go to school, which really put them in a hole from the beginning if we can't get them into school at an early age. And so, believe it or not, Chancellor, we actually did over 7,000, not only visits for these kids, but these 7,000 kids were able to get vaccinated and go to school. So that's a lot of kids when you think about it. And so then we started taking those mobile units to churches. And then I started saying, well, look, we operate in a lot of different communities. We need to find a way to get a mobile clinic in Winston-Salem. And so the idea came up when I was having conversations with Winston-Salem State, your team, and it was remarkable the ideas that they had already had. So we took those ideas and we invested in that mobile clinic, and it's done tremendous work for helping those in need access healthcare. And then now we can follow up to make sure that they've got the specialty care and even some of the hospital needs that they might have. And so I will tell you, that's how it began, and it's been a wonderful partnership, and we're trying to do more and more of those types of investments in our community.
Yeah. Carl, take us through in terms of Novant Health, in terms of the system. You have, you know, a major operation here in Winston-Salem, but you also have operations in four states and in many cities and many communities. Talk to me a little bit about how is it that you make a decision about where to go and where to take Novant. You went to Eastern North Carolina a while back, to Brunswick County. So talk to me a little bit about those communities and the different communities that you're in.
Okay, so Novant Health, first of all, obviously is a not-for-profit private health system. We're roughly about $5.5 billion in revenue, 15 hospitals. You said it, 600 clinics, 60% of them are primary care. We've got 29,000 employees and team members that work with us that I'm very, very proud of. We've got about 4,000 doctors on the medical staff. And I'll tell you that there's a secret sauce that we look for in every community. And that sauce is, can we effectively deliver the remarkable care we're known for and really get excited with the community about delivering that care? And I'll tell you that every market that I've gone to and every community and county, it's really been amazing to see how they've accepted Novant Health. But, you know, sometimes they've already got health systems there and they may not know Novant Health. So it takes a little while for people to invite us in. So Chancellor, I'll tell you, I'm proud that we operate. Winston-Salem is our corporate headquarters. I live in Winston, and we have a remarkable system in Winston-Salem. We've got another big presence in Charlotte. We've got large operations in Northern Virginia. We've got some operations, obviously, in South Carolina and in Georgia. But North Carolina has the majority of our operations. And what we generally do is we look for communities that want to invite us to be part of delivering remarkable care, partnering with physicians, you know, treating and investing in our community. And people who are interested in that, we're raising our hand saying we're coming and we're ready to deliver care to everyone in that community.
Fantastic. Thanks for that. Now, you know, we, a couple months ago, you know, we wake up and life is very different. And all of a sudden now we find we got COVID-19, we got the coronavirus going around. Tell me your initial reactions and what happened when you had to really put things in motion to get ready for this pandemic.
Yeah, Chancellor, I'll tell you what, when I think about, obviously we were following all along what was happening in China. We were trying to pay attention to what we were hearing from the CDC. And we were blessed because our executive team, we stood up our command center early, very, very early, before the first case ever reached North Carolina. And by setting that command center up, it was able for us to really get focused on how are we really going to ensure, let's prepare for the worst and figure out how we protect our team members and our communities. And that day, we got busy with, when I think about the personal protective equipment, we were able to secure a significant amount of that PPE to protect our team members and our community early in the process. So we've got a centralized distribution center that we were able to store about 3.5 million masks and gowns and all of the things that we needed to protect our people. And then second, so I kind of break it into our people were first. That I was trying to secure our people. And so second was looking at our place of operations. And so immediately we stood up these respiratory assessment centers, including in underserved markets and areas, so that we could test people out in the community and not have them have to come into our hospitals or our clinics to spread COVID-19 everywhere. And so that was very helpful. We were one of the first systems that set that up. And we probably tested more people to date than any other health system when you look at us setting those respiratory assessment centers up early and those screening centers up early. And then I look at our place of operations, we started to change the flow of how people were gonna access healthcare. So, for example, we started to look at how many intensive care beds we had. And we had these wonderful models. Our team came up with some predictive modeling. We utilized the model that the University of Pennsylvania that they came up with. And then we put our local data in it. And it was able to predict how many med-surg beds we were going to need, how many intensive care unit beds we were going to need, how many ventilators we were going to need, the impact of social and physical distancing and how that would impact. And with those models, we then redesigned our facilities to be ready for what that surge might look like. So I'm just giving you some of those planning early. Those early measures got us prepared. And then we got the word out and education out on to our community about what social distancing really meant. We actually started working county by county because we couldn't originally get the governor to close and do a lockdown across North Carolina. So we got county by county to start closing and requiring this physical distancing. Yeah. And that really has helped a lot. So now we're in the process, yeah, Chancellor, of helping people reopen and how do we figure out a safe way to do that.
Was there anything in your history, in your past, that prepared you for this, Carl? Or anything that you had experienced up to this point that prepared you for what's happening now?
Well, you know, Chancellor, I was thinking about my career. I was telling this to our team I do a weekly webcast to all 30,000, 29,000 people, and they get to ask questions to me. And I was letting them know one day of just my life experience and the details of me dealing with type 1 diabetes. And it seems like in my career, I was always sent to charge the hill, charge the fire, and help people not overcome crises, but come out of them prepared and ready to thrive, ready to really soar. And so I will tell you, my whole career has been built on helping people come through difficult times and having a culture of caring that helps people thrive in an environment where people think it's not possible.
Oh man, I love that. I love that. Those core values, I mean, they'll go a long way and from a leadership standpoint. One of the things, so I'm looking and we're right in the middle of this pandemic or maybe even before, and I turn on, I think YouTube or something, and I see Dougie Fresh and then I see Anthony Hamilton doing something. And it looked like for me that it was associated with Novant. Have you seen these things? Is there any way that we get this up?
Yeah, no, you didn't make it up, Chancellor. That's all facts. I'll tell you what we started looking at is, you know, as we started to look at our communication efforts to educate all of our community, you know, some people like to hear messages on television, some like billboards, some like, you know, emails. And, you know, we've got over a million patients that connect with us on MyChart. And so we connect with them directly with their doctors. But we started thinking about when I was hearing across the entire country that we had our African-American population was suffering more than others with COVID-19.
Carl, real quick, in terms of as you go into this, and I think this is really important for us, because I was thinking that it almost, we were well into this pandemic, and it's only been in the past couple weeks that people really started paying attention to that. It wasn't until Chicago or Detroit, I forgot which one, that people start really paying attention to the fact that this disease was disproportionately affecting people of color, primarily African Americans. But you said you were in that space early on.
Yeah, because here's the deal. When you've been trying to eliminate in these health disparities like we've been at Novant Health since before the pandemic, nothing changed in our minds. All it did was exacerbate the fact that these health disparities exist. So we not only already knew it, we were trying to figure out ways that we could actually help address it. So our example was moving access to care closer to our communities and opening up new sites of care just for the minority population to be able to access testing and screening and other, like for example, we're giving masks in those community centers, so people can be connected and understand what's going on. But you just hit on something key, was how do we help educate and make sure that people understand why it's so important maybe to stay at home? Or why is it so important if you've got a serious illness that you might want to socially or physically distance from people right now or have a mask? And that's what's beautiful about Dougie Fresh and Alexandra Hamilton. We reached out to them to say, look, this is another way we can communicate to a different demographic, a different population. We need your help. And they not only said yes, but within their own homes, they recorded the messages of why it's so important to stay at home. Why is it so important to understand the impact of COVID-19 on the African-American community? And they actually did a remarkable job of helping us get that message across. And so my comment to you, though, Chancellor, is we've got to find lots of ways to communicate to people. And the one thing we noticed, like I was telling you about how we reduced the pneumonia health disparities by understanding what it was that our African community really needed, we needed to find a better way to communicate to make sure they were hearing what they needed to hear to respond to COVID-19.
Yeah, do you have a way of kind of looking at the response to it and how well it was received or anything like that? Do you have any analysis on that?
Yes, so far, Chancellor, we've gotten a lot of feedback from the consumers we interact with on the response to the from the community, the response to the how people are showing up at the testing centers. So just for example, at one of our Michael Jordan clinics in Charlotte, I think you might have experienced it with me one day, that was transitioned to just a testing center. And we have now, because of those videos, been testing more African Americans, and we're able to help more African Americans in those sites. The other day, we tested about 25% of the patient population was COVID-19 positive. So really? It's a great example to show how we're getting people to come in to access healthcare in the right place so that then we can help care for them.
That's great. You talk about, you know, trying to communicate with different populations. You're bringing in, musicians and entertainers, Dougie Fresh, Anthony Hamilton. But also you mentioned just a minute ago, the partnership that you have with Michael Jordan in the clinic in Charlotte. Talk a little bit about that, Carl, because I think it's so important for the work that's going on in Charlotte, and talk about Michael's kind of interaction and response to working with you.
Yeah, so Michael Jordan, obviously, we are the official healthcare provider of the Charlotte Hornets. And Michael and I got to know each other, and the care that we provided the team, and then, of course, all of the people that come into the arena in Charlotte. And over the years, he's watched the remarkable care that we've delivered. And he reached out to me personally just a few years ago and said, "Hey, Carl, I want to contribute $7 million to help you as you, I hear you talk about diversity, inclusion, and health equity. And I want to invest in that. Your idea of that is something I want to be part of." And so he offered $7 million, and we have now, we're building the second. We'll have two Michael Jordan family clinics. That not only did he show up for the ribbon cutting, but he showed up, Chancellor, and it was a remarkable day. The tears coming down his face as he talked about giving back to a community that was in need. And he wanted to be proud of that. He actually told me he's prepared to do more of that so we could help more communities. And I'm so proud of that clinic as an example, just watching the people who would have had to travel miles and miles for care. Now they've got it right there in their community, and they can get all the care they need and deserve.
How do they pay for the services?
Well, so that's the beauty of Novant Health, Chancellor. We've had a remarkable, because we're a not-for-profit, private, not-for-profit tax-exempt organization, we've got an unbelievable finance team that's come up with a way to help people in even neighborhoods who have no ability to pay, or those that do have the ability to pay. And so if you're at or below 200% of the federal poverty level, you'll never get a bill from Novant Health. And so that's the beauty of an organization that's committed to its community and wants to invest in its community. I think last year we did close to $900 million in community benefit to all the communities we operate in. And the Michael Jordan Clinic is a great example. You know, there's a lot of people who come who have the ability to pay, and then there's others who don't. And of course, we're there to serve all of them, regardless if they've got insurance or not.
Oh man, that's wonderful. And that's good to hear. I mean, making that kind of commitment to the communities in which you serve. And that's great. Carl, take us right today. Where are we with this pandemic?
Well, I tell you what, so I'll just give you an overview from all of our markets just to kind of get a feel. So there's some good news. The physical distancing and the social distancing actually worked. So we're seeing a flattening of the curve. We're not seeing as much stress on the health systems themselves. So as we start, just today, we reopened a significant part of our services because we were seeing so many patients that were not coming into our facilities that had chronic illnesses such as that needed heart care and the need for stroke care and other follow-up care that people needed. So we reopened, and I'm happy to tell you that about 60% of the patients that were once seeing us just a week ago or you know early March, we're back up to seeing about 60%. So we're kind of excited about having patients receive the care they need and deserve. And we're doing it in a very safe way. We're watching for spikes in COVID-19 cases. Like right now, we've got some spikes in Virginia. So we're watching closely how quickly we'll open up there. In Rowan County, we see some spikes with a long-term care facility that we're paying attention to. And so we're having to watch that. But for the most of our markets, other than the two I just mentioned, we're actually seeing a decline or a flattening of any new hospitalizations in those facilities. And so I'm very proud of that. And so Chancellor, we're getting ready to open up and now we're starting to help our communities. Like for example, Winston-Salem, we're working to help them with businesses and how to open up in a safe way, utilizing masking, utilizing social distancing. How do we help them understand the re-engineering and the sanitation and disinfecting that we need to do? But just know that Novant Health right now is probably one of the safest places to receive care with all the new processes we put in place.
Very nice. So what have you done? You have 29,000 team members. Talk to me about how the care in which you have given to your team members, many of them, we talk about, you know, essential workers, frontline workers. I'm sure many of the nurses, we've heard the stories about nurses. We've heard the stories about people who work in the healthcare systems across the country. What specifically did Novant do to try to help 29,000 team members?
Yeah, Chancellor, I think our people, you know, you just described it. They've been the real heroes, and it's been everyone from physicians to nurses to advanced practitioner providers. It's been all of our support services, our environmental support, our food service individuals. You know, they've all been there 24/7, making sure that our patients and our communities had the services ready when they needed them. And so they're the heroes, and I'm really proud of our response and how we have responded. So the first thing we did was secure personal protective equipment to make sure they felt safe. The second thing is communication and trust. This weekly broadcast and the webcast we've been doing to 29,000, you know, about 20 to 30 minutes of it is an update. The other 30 minutes is really for them to ask me direct questions and the experts just to ask direct questions about their safety, about what we're seeing, about our modeling, about how we can help them. And then it was from that communication that led for us to create something called the Hope for Remarkable Team Aubergine. It's a hope fund for Remarkable Team Aubergine. And what we did is executives at Novant Health put money in it, local community leaders put money in it, and we actually got over $1 million in it. And then I moved with the discussion with the executive team, I moved 10 million of Novant Health's money. So now we've got close to $12 million in a fund. And it's for any, because I was worried about all of our team members. You mentioned a lot of them that are essential workers that were working on the front line that might have financial hardships during COVID-19. So again, investing in our community, investing in our people. And so far we've had, I think, 2,500 applicants for that fund. And we're processing that money now to make sure people who might, their spouse might have lost their job, they might have, you know, not able to pay the rent, get food, access the needed medications that they need. We're actually utilizing that fund to help them all right now during this pandemic.
Yeah, and I know, and I can see on your desk that you have a crystal ball. And since you have a crystal ball, I'm going to ask you, what will the world look like post this pandemic?
So I will tell you, Chancellor, you know, obviously I'm paying attention to the treatment protocols and the how much progress we're making on a vaccine. Because I think it's going to take that to get back to the normal that everyone is used to. But I am preparing our organization for what we are calling the new normal, where, you know, we continue, we might have to wear a mask to go places. We will continue to have to social distance. We're going to have to continue to look at new ways to disinfect. You know, Novant Health was already one of the best organizations in the country for the lowest infections. Well, we've got to be even better than that. And we've got to make sure there's no infections. And so it's those kind of things that I think you're going to see us do. I'm already looking at how patients are re-entering our health system. You know, we're trying to eliminate waiting rooms, and we don't want people waiting. We're trying to find ways where we've got a single flow of how patients access our facilities, access our clinics. We're even going to serve patients in their cars if we need to. And so my point is we're changing the way we're going to deliver care so that it continues to be remarkable, but it's also remarkably safe through the eyes of our consumers.
And I know you're doing some exciting things around with clinical trials, Carl. Could you take really just a moment to tell our listeners and our viewers about clinical trials and the work that's being done? And I actually, because I've kind of been on this landscape for a while, I think it's going to change our research methodologies. At least it looks like it's changing anyway. Maybe I could be wrong, but tell me what you're doing in that space.
No, I think you're right, Chancellor. So Novant Health, along with Johns Hopkins, we're the only two organizations right now that are on these three clinical trials. And I'm proud that Novant Health was selected. But we've got remarkable physicians and we've got remarkable researchers that were really wanting to test these new, COVID-19 pharmaceuticals. And so one of them, and we're really two of them, are really outpatient basis and focus. So right now it's early in the clinical trial, but we started with, these are more moderate to mild case COVID-19 cases that we're testing right now in our outpatient setting. And so hopefully we're gathering data. We should have results, you know, as we continue to collect. And then we just got approved for another clinical trial for critically ill patients. And so we're now just beginning to test that in our intensive care units. And so we're, again, just beginning, and we'll be gathering data to see the effectiveness of these protocols. And hopefully what we're all hoping for is that one of these treatment protocols actually becomes what we need it to become, is a cure and a full recovery.
Yeah. And what are you hearing about a vaccine, Carl?
So, you know, I'm hearing that it's still going to take some time. I think even that, you know, we're hearing that there's a new drug that people are testing, and the FDA is just approved. It's, remdesivir. And so it really is an opportunity for us to look at how that might play into a future vaccine. Don't know if it will or not, but I still think it's going to take some time. I know people are saying we might have one by the end of the year. I just think when you look at the history of vaccines, Chancellor, you and I both know it's going to take a lot, not only to first to mass produce the vaccine, but we got to make sure it's safe, and it's going to take a while. And I'm thinking it's still probably a year and a half away before we might have a vaccine.
Wow. And if we think about kind of getting back to normal, so to speak, and think about large gatherings and putting people close together, what are your thoughts in terms of our ability to do that, say, in the next 3-6 months? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think we're going to, obviously the economy is going to open. Yeah. You know, people are going to want to go back to church. There's going to be an opportunity for us to figure out how to come together. I do think it's going to take some re-engineering, though, Chancellor, on how we do that. And I'm going to start with, I think people like myself, you know, for example, who has type 1 diabetes, I mean, and others who might have other high-risk comorbidities, we might need to just continue to watch what we're doing and make sure we're social distancing, make sure we're constantly washing our hands and sanitizing and wearing masks. But I think it might be good for our entire public to figure out some new reengineering. I was just talking to some of my people I go to church with. I sit on their finance committee of our church, and I was talking about how we're going to have to find a way. You know, we used to put maybe you know, a couple thousand people in the church. We're going to have to find a way with maybe additional masses, and how do we social distance in the church to be able to get people back in for gatherings. But it's that re-engineering and that creativity that I think is going to be really important. And I know we're doing it at the hospital system, and I know we're going to have to do it probably in every business and every organization until we find a vaccine or a cure.
Carl, are you guys doing any analysis about how people feel about returning to certain spaces, particularly even hospitals, for example? Are you collecting any data on that at all?
We are. So I talked to you about bringing, we've got a lot of consumers that we poll for information, and volunteers that participate in a lot of our polling of questions and on how patients might react. And the first poll we did, 65% of our patients or the community that we talked to actually said in question, they said they wanted and they would come back for routine care in a health system now. And so that's an early beginning, but I do think it's going to be our communication now on showing them the new processes, showing them how we're disinfecting even more, showing them how we're cleaning and sanitizing, showing them how not only are our team members wearing masks, but we're going to provide masks for them, educating them on the fact if two people have a mask and one has COVID-19, the contagion probability is only 1.5%. So it's those kind of educations that we're going to have to continue to do to get everyone comfortable to getting the care they need.
All right, now I need your help. You know, I'm chancellor at a university, and I'm contemplating, and we all are contemplating, reopening in the fall and bringing students back on campus. You are aware that we emptied out all of our universities across the country, and there's a big push to really get universities back open. Tell me how I can bring my students back and feel like they're safe and they're secure.
Yeah, I tell you what, Chancellor, that's going to be a tough one, because you know...
I need an answer. I'm working on that right now, Carl.
I'm thinking about your university because I've walked it, I've toured it. I'm thinking about those classrooms. I do think you might have to find a way, though, even with dorms. I'm trying to figure out economically how it's feasible. But, you know, is that every other room? Is that one person to a room? Is that how do you bring people back and you have every other seat? And is it, you need to have a mask and, you know, sanitizer available everywhere. I mean, to me, there's going to be a lot of that needed in that redesign that I think it's going to happen. It's going to be really something that I think if you don't do, you might see spikes in care. But I want you to know, Novant Health is willing to help you and we're willing to take care of anybody who needs the health care.
Yeah, that makes me feel a whole lot better. Let's close this out, because I know you gotta jump off and go to another meeting. But a quick segment with me, Carl. Anytime you go through something like this, and you know, you and I, in terms of our life, have been through so many difficult situations in the middle of a crisis. You know, sometimes it's an opportunity to be creative, to be innovative, to think about how do we do things differently. We talked a little bit tonight about that. And so if we think about how do we reimagine ourselves, you have been at the forefront of dealing with this. As a leader, what would you suggest that companies, organizations are doing now to reinvent themselves?
Yeah, I'm going to start for us. You know, we had a wonderful culture. And, you know, my team and my executive team and I had invested a lot in the culture of the organization. And we've invested a lot in the people. And I say that and people say, well, what do you mean by the culture? And it's a culture of caring. It's a culture of trust. It's a culture of people wanting to really do the right thing to help our communities. And it was that culture that right now you're seeing shine brightly. And it's shining so bright. You know, when I think about how we were the first to get out and try to help our communities and overcome COVID-19, it was because of that culture of people. It was because of those heroes. And I don't ever want to lose that. We've invested in that culture, and I want to make sure we continue to invest in it. The other thing is communication. You know, what I've learned is I was on the webcast last week, and one of my team members sent me a note during the question and answer period, Chancellor, and they said, you know, we hate that there's COVID-19, but we love you and this webcast, this weekly webcast. And we want to know if you'll keep doing it after the pandemic's over. And so I'm saying it's that communication that I think people have is really where the foundation of the trust has been built a long time inside of Novant Health. And I want to make sure we continue that. And then the other thing I'll say, Chancellor, that I've watched is as an organization, we've made decisions faster. You know, we thought we were nimble. We thought we were quick before. I will tell you, we're moving faster, quicker than we've ever moved in the history of Novant Health. Wow. You know, to set up these respiratory assessment centers, to really get out and help people in need and do it quickly, fast, and an efficient way and protect all of our team members while doing it has been really amazing. And I don't want to lose that as we start to come out of it. This quick, fast, nimble ability, to me, that's something that we've got to retain. And then I think you're going to see the way we just care for people. We're just going to continue to look at what remarkable means. And I mean the next remarkable by how do you make something improve now that you've been through the pandemic?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think that's great. And I think about how we operate and what we learn. And I agree with you. We learned some amazing lessons in this. If you came to me maybe 6 months or 9 months and said that we were going to put all our courses online, and if I went to the faculty and I asked them, would you join me in an effort to put our courses online? It never would have happened. People would have said it's impossible. We can't do that. There is no way. So we find during this crisis that we can do the impossible. But I don't know how to sustain that. And I want to sustain that.
Yeah, I think you just hit on something. I was thinking about all of our digital capabilities. You know, we had invested a lot in these virtual visits that were captured in the medical record. And again, we have over a million people that interact with us daily. But I bet I only had about 200 doctors that actively engaged before the pandemic. And now I'm telling you, I've got 2,500 providers that not only actively engage, but I think they see now that that's going to be part of the future of healthcare that we're going to offer in an affordable way, and it's not going to go away. So to your point, we've got to maintain and retain that innovation and that creativity.
Man, that's great. Carl, I got to thank you, man, for being my guest, man. This has been great. I know you have to go. I'm going to have to get you back on the show. This has been wonderful, great conversation. And I think it's something that we all have learned. I've learned a lot doing this. Thank you for being on the show tonight.
Well, Chancellor, thank you for your partnership. Look, I appreciate all you've done for Novant Health. We've hired many, many of the students from Winston-Salem State University, And I want to continue this relationship, this partnership. And I want you to also know that, you know, we've been fighting health disparity long before this pandemic, and we're going to fight it even harder, not only during, but after this pandemic.
Absolutely. Look, great way to end the show. Thanks for being on here. I'll see you down the road. I'll see you somewhere down the road. You know that.
I'll see you soon.
All right, man. You take care. Thank you, everyone. Those of you who are online, those of you who are listening to us, for being a part of Future Focus Now. Mark your calendar for next Tuesday at 8 p.m. for another edition of Future Focus Now. Good night, everybody.